It's America's 250th birthday, and I'm going to shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, they've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging, storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. So, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture. Where America shops for furniture.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now, I'm sharing it all. Join me for unfiltered talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.
Time now for Mego and Shine on WEEI.
I think it's Rafi Devers' position. I think he's the third baseman, and at that point, that's where it stands. And he's done it for, you know, a really long time now. And I think he's only getting better at that position. I think his defense is getting better every single year. We don't know what the future holds, but we know it holds Rafi Devers. So I think he's got to play defense. It's going to keep him athletic, and he's going to hit because of, you know, him being at third base. He doesn't know any other position. He doesn't want to play any other position, and he's going to fight for it, even if it's with any of the younger guys, any new guy.
Mego and Shime here on a wonderful Saturday early afternoon, late morning. Mego, good morning, good afternoon. How are you today?
You do not know what time it is.
No, 11's such a weird spot. Like, it's
I just ate lunch. Because I just preemptively was like, I'd rather be full, overly full than hungry during this shift.
Would you like to hear my rule when it comes to drinking?
Drinking?
I think it pertains.
Okay.
Generally, it's whenever McDonald's starts serving lunch that you can start drinking on the weekend.
When do they start?
10:30 a.m.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Man, I'm a terrible day drinker.
Like if you're, you know, getting after it for football season or, you know, March Madness right around the corner, something like that. I think as soon as McDonald's changed that menu, boom, it's drinking time.
I do love a daytime tailgate for football, but that might be the only occasion in which I day drink. That and if you're getting ready with a bride and everybody's having champagne.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, I'm terrible. It doesn't matter if I take a giant nap in the middle of the afternoon, in the evening, and I'll get back up and I'll go out and I'll do whatever you're supposed to do, but I'll just be miserable. I'll be so cranky. I can't do it.
Yeah, I love day drinking because that just generally means cookouts and being outside, and I could do that. Eating and drinking sounds like the greatest time. It is the greatest time in the world. And so for me, that's right up my alley. But
I like that rule for you, though.
Thank you. You know, I figured, especially someone that gets up as early as I do, you get to experience that a few days this week.
Second breakfast, man.
Yeah, second breakfast, basically. Or just early lunch, you know, it's fine. And it's the perfect opportunity. But the Boston Red Sox down in Fort Myers getting ready for spring training. We start today, right?
Yes. So
you
this
excited?
Is the first Grapefruit League game at 1:05. So right after our show wraps up, you can go over and hear that and be excited about spring coming at some point, even though it doesn't feel like it at all outside.
No, it does not feel like spring quite yet, but maybe this week we're supposed to get close to, we might be pushing 50.
What?
A couple days this week. I know.
I'll
shocking.
Believe it when I see it.
I don't want to step on
Curtis's
toes.
Everything is still
here,
an ice rink, so yeah. I don't trust that.
Yeah, the weather apps indicate that high 40s, maybe pushing 50.
I don't
50.
Trust those.
So, hey, you never know. Hopefully we get there. But spring has sprung down in Fort Myers. Mm-hmm. The Red Sox are getting ready for the preseason. I know Joe Braverman is excited, waving in the Red Sox studio way back there. He's all geeked up for this. But I think the biggest thing is that we actually have like a Red Sox team that's interesting to talk about, that's fun to talk about.
How great is that?
Oh my God, it's such a change of pace. Like last year, it was kind of just like, oh, here we go. Red Sox, they start hot and just kind of fall apart in the second half of the season. But this year, there's chaos in the locker room,
which
I think is
messy.
I think it's great. I think Curtis kind of pointed out on our show at some point this week that he felt like Alex Cora wanted this. And I feel like in a locker room or in a clubhouse where guys just kind of are fine with the status quo, sometimes you need to inject some chaos. And Alex Bregman, to me, is that chaos. He's creating it with Rafi Devers. He's creating it with Tristan Casas. You make guys a little uncomfortable. You don't want to make them entirely uncomfortable. It's not like looming trades all over the place, but it's kind of just shake guys off their spot a little bit, get them ready, make them want to work for it. And I think that's what this does. Casas even says it in the cut. Rafi's going to work for it. If that's the case, if Rafael Devers is going to work for it, then you're going to get the best version of him at third base, and that's going to be great for the Red Sox. And if he doesn't work for it, the better guy's going to play there anyway. So I think it's like a win-win right now for the Red Sox.
I agree with what you're saying. I don't think it's so much chaos, though, as just creating competition.
Yeah.
Which should be happening in this locker room organically anyway, but you create it when you bring in Alex Bregman and he plays third base way better than Rafael Devers,
so much
as
better.
We've been talking about all week. But my irritation is that the guys who are in the locker room that we're hearing from, Tristan Casas and Rafi Devers, sound like they're resistant to the competition. Rafi Devers does not sound like he wants to compete for third base. He just doesn't want to move. He's like, no.
It's a sense of entitlement.
Exactly. And Tristan Casas has the same thing because we didn't hear it in that clip, but when asked about the young guys coming up, Mayer and Anthony, he's like, and Christian Campbell, and whether those guys will have a place on the roster this year for opening day. And he's like, I don't think so.
Do you think?
And it's like, seriously, Casas?
Do you think with Casas, though, it's a sense of entitlement, or it's more so just a very opinionated guy with no filter and like kind of just.
Can't that be the same thing? If you're entitled and you have no filter, that's not going to help yourself.
To me, this feels like Rafi is entitled. He feels entitled to third base. He feels like that's my position, even though Alex Cora has said the guy who signed that contract is in St. Louis. Like, that to me seems like entitlement. With Casas, it feels like a guy who is very, look at me. I have opinions too. I feel like I'm just super important. Maybe
let
not necessarily
entitlement. Let me tell you why it's so lame by Casas.
Okay, here, let me hear
because
it.
Because Casas had such a bumpy road getting into this clubhouse from the minors to the majors.
He did.
There was a veteran in that clubhouse who was so irritated by him. We got stories about him napping in front of his locker, and everybody's like, oh, maybe he's a little goofy. Like, it was not an easy transition for him coming up from the minors to the major leagues. And now you have these younger players coming up who everyone has been waiting years for, and he's going to turn around and be like, I don't really think there's a spot for them on this team opening day. That is such a bad look, from my opinion. Like, what are you doing? It's like that loser guy like Ben Affleck in Dazed and Confused who's so excited to haze the younger guys because you went through it and you didn't. Like, be better than that. I hate that from Casas. And I think the Red Sox hate it too because he's the only one who is a major leaguer who was playing with the kids yesterday against Northeastern.
We can actually hear from Tristan Casas talking about how he doesn't want the younger guys to be on the opening day roster.
You talked about wanting Rafi at third, wanting Bregman at second. Otherwise in the roster, you're running the team. Would you have Campbell, Anthony, and Meyer on the opening day roster?
No. No, I think we got some grown men up there right now that need to iron some things out. We need to show up and see what that first little taste of us all together looks like. I think their time is going to come, and it could be earlier rather than later. But I think for right now, the roster is beautiful. It's organized. It's great, and it's structured really well.
Tristan, what do you know? Yeah, what do you know?
Talk about needing to grow up. Like, what?
Jeez.
I understand that the question was designed to be like, if you're in charge of the team. But the simple out is, yeah, man, I don't make those decisions. I just like to come out and play baseball. I let AC and Brez make those decisions. And it's that simple. You say something like that, and this just completely goes away. It never becomes a thing. And instead, now you're just kind of like bringing it upon yourself. Being like, yeah, no, the young guys definitely shouldn't be on the opening day roster.
He's speaking so out of turn is
like,
what it is.
What are we, like, where did this come from? Why do you feel the need or feel like you have the ability to say something like this? You are not a veteran. You're not like David Ortiz post multiple World Series wins. You're not even Mookie Betts. Like, what have you done to ever say anything like this?
Casas is just a Martian and it should be endearing. And I know guys like Rob Bradford, our buddy who's down there around the team all the time and like very tapped in. He's like, that's a big personality. He's a very distinct personality. And if he's playing well on the field and he's getting along with guys, like, who cares? Well, this locker room has had a leadership problem since Xander Bogaerts left. And it matters because now you're bringing in Alex Bregman. In part, everybody told me this is such a great signing because Bregman's going to be an immediate leader. Oh, he brings in the championship pedigree and he's a leader in that locker room and he wants to talk to the media and he's the adult in the room. And now the kid in the room, Tristan Casas, is like calling the shots to the media and saying crazy stuff about Devers being like an elite third baseman. Like, it's not even
close to true. He is the complete opposite of elite, actually. In terms of actually playing the position, he's one of the worst in baseball.
It's so bizarre. And I just have to say, like, the silver lining to all of this is that they have Alex Cora. Yeah. That they signed Alex Cora to that contract last year because otherwise you are a disaster. I don't care what talent you bring in. The mess in this clubhouse can only be settled by Alex Cora, and I think he will. And I think he'll do the right thing because when you listen to him talk about it, he's like, yeah, Raffy made a deal with Chaim Bloom, and that guy's in St. Louis now. So tough timing, Raffy, but like, I don't know why you
I call the shots now, bud.
And
it feels like Cora has the leverage to do it.
They're just not self-aware. How did Raffy think that he was going to be playing third base for 10 years?
I don't know, especially because, like, Casas even mentions, like, it'll keep him in shape. If that's the only reason he's in shape,
that's a major issue.
It's not working. He looks like he's eating a couple cheeseburgers in the offseason.
Like, which is his right. You know,
cheeseburgers
players,
are delicious.
They go up, they go down. You know, the physicality doesn't always show immediately. But you'd think that if somebody was coming in to compete for their position, but he doesn't want to compete. He wants to be entitled to it.
Yep.
He's saying, I got the long-term contract. I got the big money. That's my position. I'm a prideful guy. Talk to my agent. And by the way, if you ask me about a trade, I'm not going to say no. I'm just going to say, I haven't really thought about that yet because I assume that I'm entitled to this position that
answer.
I signed a contract with a different GM years ago at this point.
A texter points out the Casas and Raffy come off as total DBs. I would be okay.
Defensive backs? Because we could use those.
The Patriots could use another one of those. But no, the other word, the inappropriate word, you're not allowed to say. I would be okay if both got traded for good return. Would you be okay if Devers and or Casas were traded in the next week?
Oh, I'm fine with Casas being traded. Devers, you can't trade. You would have to trade low right now, and that's stupid at any point with a guy with that much talent. And look, as much as I'll crush him for the defense and how bad he's been at third base and the errors that we've watched for the last three seasons, you do want his bat.
Yeah,
like,
you do.
He is
you're
a offensive powerhouse. So, yeah, you need him in the lineup. You're paying him for a reason. The reason just isn't third base, and I wish that somebody would sit down and talk to him about
that. Well, yeah, because even, like, David Ortiz tried to come out and defend him. Like, he's the face of the franchise. He's the new David Ortiz. If he's the new David Ortiz, he plays DH. He doesn't play third base. Like, that's the crazy thing. Is like, Ortiz is going to come out and support Raffy. Ortiz, you didn't play in the field, bud. All you did was hit, and you mashed, and that's great. And that's what we want Devers to do. We want him to just be healthy and mash all season long. Play 155 out of 161 games and just swing the stick. That's all we need. That's all we ask of you. Bregman is plenty capable of playing third. That allows Campbell to come up and play second at any point during the season, whether you want to start him there or bring him up later. Doesn't matter. But it allows for your team as a whole to grow in the right direction. This is inevitable anyways. Raffy Devers is not going to be playing third base 5 years from now, 7 years from now, or at the end of his contract. He's just not. So, like, if you're going to do it now because you have Bregman, why not? Who cares? Make the transition, start now, and start building towards the future. So when those younger guys are ready and they do come up, you're filling out your positions. You already know Raffy is locked in at DH and you can fill everything in around him.
And I think that's part of the Casas thing too, with him saying like Christian Campbell's not ready to come up because he knows that if Bregman bumps over to second base and Devers stays at third, and Christian Campbell then can't come up. So he's saying, like, well, he's not ready to come up anyway.
Yep.
You know, maybe soon. Maybe, like, at the end of April, those guys. Maybe on Marathon Monday, those guys will be ready. It's like, well, who are you to judge anyway?
Ugh, and then Casas calls the roster, like, beautiful.
That's just weird.
He's so weird. And
I wouldn't mind the weirdness if there was – if it endearing felt like it was coming from like a nice or silly or even authentic place.
It doesn't feel genuine.
Yeah, you're right.
It feels forced. It feels like an act, and it's gross. It's just kind of like off-putting.
Yeah, it's very off-putting, and I don't know. I can't put like my finger on one thing other than it seems to always come out kind of wrong, rubs people the wrong way. It's just off.
Yeah.
It's just off.
617-779-7937. That's your number to call in today, or you can text in to that number as well here. It's Mego and Shime on Boston Sports Original WEEI. We'll continue with some Red Sox. We'll get into some Celtics. Mego got to go to something pretty cool last night with the Boston Celtics. We'll talk about that. Final thoughts on Four Nations. We'll get into the Combine, which is right around the corner because everybody knows I'm a Combine hardo. We'll get into all of it here on Mego and Shime, but right now Zach is going to get you caught up with what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Bruins back in action tonight after the Four Nations break. With just 7 games to go until the trade deadline, they'll welcome the Anaheim Ducks to the Garden. They'll be without Charlie McAvoy, who's still battling a shoulder infection, as well as Hampus Lindholm, who's still working his way back from that lower body injury. Jeremy Swayman expected to be in net for the Bees. Puck drop from the Garden at 7. Red Sox opening Grapefruit League play this afternoon in Port Charlotte, taking on the Rays. Sadon Rafaela, Roman Anthony, and Marcelo Meyer among the notable names making the trip. Quinn Priester gets the start for the Sox. You can hear coverage of that one right here on WEEI 93.7 FM. First pitch set for 105. Celtics have a second consecutive day off after Thursday night's blowout win over the 76ers. They'll return to the Garden tomorrow afternoon, hosting Jalen Brunson and the New York Knicks. Tip off at 1. After an offseason that saw them bring in 14 new players, the New England Revolution back in action tonight, kicking off the 2025 season. They head to Nashville for a matchup with Nashville SC. Kickoff set for 8:30. Less than a month away from Selection Sunday as conference play heats up in the college basketball world. Slate today including 2 top 10 matchups. First, number 6 Tennessee heading to College Station to take on number 7 Texas A&M. Then number 8 Iowa State travels to number 5 Houston. Elsewhere across the country, a big WCC matchup as Gonzaga hosts St. Mary's. Don't forget you can hear Westwood One's coverage of that one right here on WEEI starting at 7:45. My name is Zach Cohen. That's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Mego and Shime coming up after this.
It's America's 250th birthday, and I'm going to shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, they've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging, storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. So, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Diamond Dynasty has all new Red Diamond cards and World Baseball Classic content in MLB The Show 26. Collect your favorites and compete against the best. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, more of Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Like I said, people sit here and we don't put limits on them, you know, and he said what he said, but at the end of the day, we're in the winning business. And from my end, we're going to make decisions based on competition and roster flexibility and versatility, and we're going to take our best 26 guys to Texas.
Mego and Shime here. That was Alex Cora talking about Tristan Cassis and Rafael Devers going up to the podium and saying their piece. And you said, Mego, already in the first segment that you have confidence that Alex Cora is going to take care of this and this out. Why do you have that faith in him? Because the last couple seasons, it feels like there has been this lack of leadership. And now, really, the only thing that's changed is the pitching staff. They've added a couple guys in Walker Buehler, Garrett Crochet, and then they've added Alex Bregman. Do you think like that's the key, is Cora has a kind of right-hand man in Bregman, having that prior experience together? Is that kind of why you're confident in him, or are you just confident in Alex Cora, the coach?
I'm honestly just confident most recently because of what he said when confronted with Devers saying that he doesn't want to move off third base, which is, it's a deal that he made with a guy who's not here anymore. I think Alex sees it for what it is and wants the best players out there and is faced with the problem that is opposite of what he's been going through. Like, what he's been going through the last several years is being, okay, Kike wants to play shortstop, Story's out, and we've moved on from Xander Bogaerts, so I'm going to keep putting Kike at shortstop even though he was horrible at it and kept committing errors. Like, now it's more, you've got this influx of guys. You've got a log jam, maybe, of guys. And that's a much better position to be in, even if it... And I think he's probably more comfortable dealing with the egos in the clubhouse there. The other thing is that Cora has such a long-standing relationship with both guys in this. Mm-hmm. Cassis is a wild card in every sense. He's on the other side. But with Bregman and with Devers, we have heard Cora say for, like... years at this point, again, since Bogaerts left, Devers has the opportunity to step in this leadership role. And Devers just hasn't done it.
He hasn't wanted to.
He just doesn't, and that's fine.
Yep. Like, not every guy's a leader.
I know everybody feels like they're on different sides of this kind of debate, but your best player doesn't have to be your leader.
No.
Like, have to be the heart and soul of your team or whoever you want to say it, or your most vocal leader. That's all right.
Look at Manny Ramirez.
Yeah, it happens that way in every sport sometimes. I think it's tougher if it's a situation where it's your quarterback in football. Sure. But it happens. And I think that's okay. I just, don't act like all of a sudden now you're the face of the franchise now and you want to take on this power play now when you haven't been wanting to do that, Rafael Devers, for the last several seasons when they've been begging you to.
Yeah, Alex Cora doesn't seem concerned or bothered by this. And it almost feels like, to me, I'm curious your thoughts. It feels like he knows he won the power struggle, right? Like the last few years between him and Heim Bloom, Heim was, we don't trade anybody. We just build this farm system. Cora seemed kind of, I don't know, depressed, beaten down at times throughout the course of the seasons just because they didn't have the talent, they didn't have the capability of beating better teams. And then this offseason, they trade for Crochet, they sign Walker Buehler, and then they go get his guy, Alex Bregman, a guy that all reports indicated he really wanted, Breslow was hesitant on. And then they ended up getting Alex Bregman in the building. And so to me, it feels like Cora has realized that he has started to win the power battle, and he doesn't feel, there's zero fear, there's zero like malaise behind anything. Like, it's all like, I can handle all of this now because I'm the one in charge. I make the final call. I make the decisions. I don't have to answer to anybody outside of like ownership now. Like, this is my team. And I feel like he finally feels that freedom. And it looks like, to me, like that's what's going to be in the end how he handles this. Is, I'm the big guy on campus here, Rafi. Look, I love you, but you got to play DH. Bregman's the better third baseman. We need to put the best team out here. They're going to back me up, as in the front office, because I say so, and that's kind of how it's going
to
go.
And it's so easy to me because it's just numbers. You can just point to the stats. It's not like it's even close. Yeah. I will ask you, though, because I was thinking about this over this week because we kept hearing debates about face of the franchise, leader. What does that mean? Am I crazy for thinking that the face of the franchise of the Boston Red Sox right now is Alex Cora?
No. Of course it is.
I think that's who it is. And everybody's like, well, Rafi has been the face of the franchise.
No, I don't think he has.
And now Bregman's coming in and he's got this short-term contract and you want him to be face of the franchise. To me, the biggest move that they've made over the last couple years, I guess, the Devers extension was big, but everybody was doing backflips over the Cora extension, keeping him here because everyone 100%. Thought for sure he was going to bail to go somewhere else, maybe even the Dodgers, or just kick upstairs and be in somebody's front office. Like, there were real concerns about that. And so that's part of the reason why I say, like, I have a lot of faith in what Cora is going to do, because I think you're right. I think he knows that he's calling the shots right now, and what he says goes, and if you don't like it, it's going to be tough for you to have a spot here.
Yeah, I think I kind of look at this as just kind of almost like a whole new Red Sox now. It's like, to me, you're right. Alex Cora is and has been the face of the Red Sox now for the last couple years. Like, they wanted it to be Rafael Devers, but in reality, they signed that contract out of desperation. It's guys at Winter Weekend yelling, pay Rafi, pay anybody, because they wouldn't pay Mookie Betts. They traded him. They wouldn't pay Xander Bogaerts. They let him walk. And so it was almost a move of desperation that they even paid Rafael Devers in the first place. And Alex Cora has been the one who has had to stand up there in front of the media and answer all these questions. Rafael Devers, a lot of times, just like wouldn't even talk to the media, and he'd use the language barrier as a reason not to, and kind of just shy away from doing it. He doesn't want to stand in front of the cameras. He has no desire to do that. Whereas Cora has taken every sling and arrow that's been thrown at him, and he's moved along, and now he's kind of come out on the other side better for it.
Let's grab a call here, because something also just came out, a little football news piece that you're going to be very interested in.
Okay.
So let's grab a baseball call, because I know people want to talk baseball, and then we'll get to this.
John and Newton. What's up, John?
So Bregman's contract, Mego just mentioned, this is a short-term deal. If he has a good season, he's going to opt out after year one. We're still going to have a third base problem. That's not a reason necessarily to keep Rafi there, but it's something to think about.
All right. Thanks for the call, John. Yeah, I mean, it is a short-term deal. He may not be here for very long, but that's the thing, right? If he's playing awesome, that means your team's doing really, really well, mm-hmm. and I think that's just a win for the Red Sox.
Yeah, and the opt-out, look, is he probably going to want to go out and test the market and get paid? Yeah, but like he just, let's not make tomorrow's problems today's problems, and I would say that Rafi at third is going to be a growing problem anyway.
Yeah.
It's not like you're like, oh no, you're losing such a great third baseman because you put him over at DH when Bregman was here and now you have to start from square one. I just don't think you're losing that much.
It's Mego and Chime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Mego, you said there's NFL news.
Yes.
I cannot focus until you give me what
this
NFL news
is.
I'll be completely honest.
Tom Pelissero. This is a little bit surprising to me, but I want to get your take on this.
Okay.
This is just from Yahoo Sports.
This is this Patriots related?
10:51. The Rams have given Matthew Stafford's agent permission to speak to other teams.
What?
Per Tom Pelissero.
Really?
Isn't that weird?
So that means that Stafford wants to play and the Rams don't want him? Interesting.
I'm moving over to Pelissero's timeline and I'm not seeing it, so I'm guessing it's something that he just said.
Yahoo Sports tweeted it too.
Yahoo Sports tweeted it. I'm not. This is not.
It's not just some aggregator. Yeah.
No, this is the real 570K followers with the little yellow check mark, whatever that means.
Interesting.
Yeah. Per report, the Rams have given Matthew Stafford's agent permission to speak to other teams.
I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if. To me, that indicates one of two things. It's either Sean McVay believes and really likes Sam Darnold and believes that he's going to be a free agent and has a chance to sign him. Because I just don't see, like, I don't think you get rid of Stafford to bring in Rodgers when you've had this long-standing relationship with Stafford. So that's the only free agent quarterback I can see.
I would never bring in Rodgers over Stafford
not
at this point in both of their careers.
Nope, not even close. Especially when Stafford's been with the team for years and won a Super Bowl there. So that to me doesn't seem like it. So it's really just Sam Darnold. Or Sean McVay really likes a quarterback in this draft and he knows he's going to get him.
Who would he like that much?
This happened the beginning of the week. I put in my mock draft that Sean McVay was going to take a quarterback with his first round pick. It might be Jackson Dart.
What?
Yeah.
Smoking Dart.
I don't think it's. I haven't been super, super high on Jackson Dart. Like, I didn't think he was a great first round talent. I thought, you know, he was probably going to be one of those quarterbacks you take a second round flyer on, see if you can develop him, you know, your Jimmy Garoppolo style of the world. But this indicates to me that McVay feels very comfortable with a direction at quarterback, which they don't currently have on the roster. And so that means it has to be he knows he can get Sam Darnold, or he really likes a quarterback in this draft that he knows he's going to get. Because there's the Rams would have to sell the world to move from, I think it's 23 or 26 all the way up to 3 or 4 in order to draft one of the top two quarterbacks. There's just no way they can do that.
I just don't get this. So it looks like Pelissero was saying this maybe on the Rich Eisen show late yesterday. I don't know how I missed this. You didn't see this anywhere
yesterday,
did you?
No, I had no idea.
It looks like it's a real report. And I just think that's odd because I guess maybe both sides, or the Rams side, I should say, just really expected him to retire. And
yeah,
that they would just be done. And maybe they already have, like, as you said, a plan that they're moving forward with. Would you go to Sam Darnold over Matthew Stafford right now? I mean, they're kind of acting like Stafford's like 42.
Yeah, but I mean, Stafford's old and he's been banged up a lot in his career. So he's close to done. Like, he is very, very close to done. And I think my assumption is now that I see this report is that at the end of the season, those whispers about Stafford retiring were Rams whispers. They were them trying to put out any information they could to almost push Stafford out and encourage him to retire so that they didn't have to do this.
Yikes.
Because I think Sean and Matt have a very, very good relationship. I have no reason to believe otherwise. I know Sean McVay was like chomping at the bit to trade for him in the first place, and then they won a Super Bowl together that very first year. And so it makes sense from the perspective that clearly the Rams are trying to get younger. They're going to move on from Cooper Kupp. Now they're moving on from Matthew Stafford. They're really focusing on Puka Nacua, their young defense, and building that way. So that tracks. It all makes sense. But I just don't believe Les Snead and Sean McVay would move in this direction if they did not have a plan in place already.
617-779-7937 if you want to chime in on anything Boston Red Sox with the Bregman Devers / Tristan Cassis trifecta of chaos that's happening with them, or this NFL news about Matthew Stafford potentially moving on from the Rams.
Do
you think there's any chance that the Jets would go for him after the Aaron Rodgers fiasco they just went through?
Yeah, so
are they just addicted to aging quarterbacks?
No, I don't think they're addicted. I think because it seems like the Jets are seriously interested in a rookie quarterback in the draft. Like, I believe there were reports out that they have inquired at the very least about the first overall pick and what it would cost to get up there in order to draft Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, I guess. I don't really know which one they would prefer, but it seems like they are interested in the young rookie quarterbacks. But where they are picking at 7, they're behind 3-4 teams that need a quarterback. So if it falls to them where they can't draft a quarterback, Matthew Stafford's a great option. Like, he's really, really good. He almost beat the Eagles in a playoff game this year, and he was the only guy to do it.
If you're worried about Garrett Wilson getting seriously disgruntled, where it seems like he's been at least disappointed
Stafford
over the last couple of years, having to play with Zach Wilson and then the awful Aaron Rodgers experience. Like, yeah, I would think that maybe Matthew Stafford would make sense to try to keep some of your team together.
It's
such a bizarre wrinkle.
The other thing, too, is like if you go get a guy like Matthew Stafford, it makes it much easier for you to keep Davante Adams and Garrett Wilson on the team.
Yeah.
Like, you give Davante Adams a reason for staying. And I mean, I don't know if anybody's watched the Rams over the last couple of years. All he has done, Stafford, is just funnel targets to Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp. That's all he's done for like multiple years now. That's all he wants to do. He picks his two guys and he just funnels targets in that direction.
Even if you didn't watch the Rams, you watched them against the Patriots probably.
Yes, you did.
And you got to see that experience in the second half.
Got to see it live.
Yeah,
like, it was live and in person.
That was pretty brutal. That was a really interesting defensive game plan that they went in with and decided not to adjust. But I'm sure we did like 3 whole shows on that.
We can actually hear Tom Pelissero talking about the news of Matthew Stafford being told he can speak to other teams.
And my understanding has been that the Rams have been in conversations with his agent, that they've also given his agent permission to talk to other clubs and just figure out, hey, if he became available, if there were a trade, you know, what would the numbers be elsewhere here? And that takes care of multiple things. It takes care of, number one, what Matthew Stafford could get if we got to a trade, because you wouldn't be able to execute a Matthew Stafford trade without having a new deal in place. But also, it gives the Rams an idea and Stafford an idea of, hey, we're going to try to work together. Are we going to be able to work out a new contract to keep him in L.A.?
So that was Pelissero on the Rich Eisen show. It seems to me he is trying to make it sound like Stafford and the Rams are working together. But the Rams would not give him permission to look at other teams if the Rams did not plan to move on from him.
Yeah.
Like, if the Rams wanted to rework his contract and keep him around, this wouldn't have even been a thing.
Well, unless they are confident that he would look around, get an idea, and the Patriots used to do this with Devin McCourty and Julian Edelman. Let them look around, get an idea of what their market is actually like as a reality check, and then come back and say, see, what we're offering you is probably the best that you're going to get, and you like it here, so don't you want to stay here? But here's the thing, is that the free agency for quarterbacks is pretty miserable this season.
Yeah,
I mean, you got Sam Darnold.
It's a lot of old veterans.
And you got who you could go for. And then Kirk Cousins. I mean, like, you want to go
781 text thinks he wants Kirk Cousins. I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I saw that. That doesn't make sense to me. No. I don't know. I would take Matthew Stafford over Kirk Cousins at this point.
Every single day of the
week.
And
they're pretty, I mean, if you're worried about the age, like, and where your future is.
I think they're about the same age, aren't they?
I think they might be. I think...
Cousins is 36, Stafford's 37.
I was going to say, I think there's 1 year apart, so that makes sense.
It's like 6 months.
But you get into the Jameis Winston, Joe Flacco business.
Russell Wilson,
quickly,
Justin Fields.
Yeah, in free agency. Or like if you're just looking for somebody who you think could shake loose in a trade.
I would want Matthew Stafford over all these guys.
That's a dangerous prospect if you're trying to have some leverage over the situation and say, like, go back and test the waters. When you come back here, you'll see how good our offer is.
So if somehow he did like hit free agency, like they cut him or something, and he became available, do you think the want from him for him across the league would be pretty high, right?
I would think so. Somebody must.
Well, because my thought is, if there isn't a ton of ask, like, would it be a bad idea if you brought him in to back up Drake Bay?
Yes.
Really?
That doesn't make sense to me.
Why would you
have so many needs on your roster right now?
No, I know, but. I get that, but you also have just a gajillion dollars in cap space.
I know.
To the point where you're not going to be able to spend it all anyways.
Is Stafford really going to want to come in and be a backup for a sophomore quarterback?
And he definitely may not. I was just thinking, like, is there a better guy? Is there a better guy in football right now for a young quarterback to learn from than
Matthew
Stafford?
Maybe if he had already been demoted to being a backup in L.A.,
okay.
Then I think that would have made a lot of sense.
Yeah, look, I don't think it's likely. I just wanted to pose the idea just because, like, if I want Drake May to learn anything from anybody, it would be Matthew Stafford.
Oh, yeah, I think he's so excellent, and it's kind of interesting where, like, that could also be a situation where it could backfire if the Patriots continue to be inept in the way that they're organized, because then you could have a Matthew Stafford walking in and saying, I went through this with the Lions, and I really loved it there, and I loved Detroit as a fan base, but I wanted to win. And you don't want somebody showing Drake May the way out of town.
True. Very true.
So there's, like, a little of that, but I don't really see that as, like, a real fit.
Yeah, I think 508 texture makes a lot of sense. Stafford would be perfect in Pittsburgh.
Oh.
Yeah, he would fit perfect with Mike Tomlin.
That would be, I mean, Pittsburgh, and I think you're right about the Jets.
And Pittsburgh's looking for a quarterback. Yeah, they moved on from Russell Wilson. They don't want to re-sign Justin Fields. Like, I think that's another reason why I don't think the...
What about Vegas?
Vegas would love Matthew Stafford. And it's a low moving cost. You're only moving from LA to Vegas.
This is why the Rams have got to just not want him anymore.
Well, so that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think this is a test the market thing.
It's too
because
risky.
The Raiders would be happy to do that. Then they don't have to worry about, like, risking not getting Shedeur Sanders in the draft. And then they can draft a later round guy, and hopefully he develops under Matthew Stafford. And I think Pittsburgh is the perfect choice for him because they're a playoff team that has had bad quarterback play now for a couple of years, and they just need a guy who can come in and be good, and Stafford would do that almost immediately.
It would just be a problem if he went to the Jets for you.
Yeah, it would be for the New England Patriots if you went to the Jets. I don't know. I think the Jets want to go younger. That's what all signs indicate, that they like the rookie quarterback class. So I don't see him going to the Jets, which would be fortunate for you. That would be good. We don't want him to the Jets. Outside of that, I would love to see him basically anywhere. I love Matthew Stafford. He's one of my favorite quarterbacks in football. I think he is one of the more underappreciated talents the sport has had over the last 20, 30 years.
Absolutely.
617-779-7937. Scott in Maine wants to weigh in on Stafford. What's up, Scott?
Yeah, you guys are forgetting about one potential option for the Rams, and I know you're probably not going to like this, but maybe the Rams have a deal in place to trade for Joe Milton. I mean, can you imagine a young stud like Milton on a very cost-effective rookie contract, what you know, what the LA Rams could do with something like that.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, I will not be entertaining any Joe Milton from Matthew Stafford.
Stud doing a lot of work.
What are we doing? He trying to propose that as like a 1-to-1?
No, I think he was just saying like maybe the Rams want to trade for Joe Milton and make him the starting quarterback. I assure you, no one in football wants to make Joe Milton their starting quarterback.
I love Joe Milton, and he's like such a fabulous guy.
He seems like
it. And he's so fun, and I would love to see him be the backup here because I think he's fantastic.
But he's also a sixth round pick.
Yeah,
And played in one game that the Bills wanted to lose so that you didn't get the first overall pick.
You've seen him against backups and backups to the backups in every sense, whether it was preseason or the second half of that Bills game. It's fun to watch.
Yep.
But it's not realistic I think, as a starter. Maybe he's further developing. Like, that'd be awesome, too.
I have done a solid amount of shows together recently, and I believe we'll be doing more together in the future. I would like to propose a rule. No stupid Joe Milton trade conversations.
Good luck.
That's my one bit of rule. 617-779-7937. If you want to weigh in, you can call in that same number. You can text us as well. You can reach us on Twitter, at ShimeTime, at Megan_Ottolini. We'll be back with more of Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI.
Little Bob here. It's America's 250th birthday. So, shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. We've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving and those signature Bob-a-pedic seats. So stop into Bob's Discount Furniture or shop online at mybobs.com, where America shops for furniture.
Introducing the all-new MLB Plus, your ticket to streaming baseball's best.
Let's go!
Enjoy MLB Network 24/7 with live out-of-market games and award-winning shows. Enhanced game nights with MLB Big Inning, live and commercial-free. And hear live home and away radio broadcasts of every game, blackout-free. Even stream minor league games all season. It's all here and it's all new. Get MLB Plus for just $59.99 a year. Visit MLB.com/MLB Plus.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show, How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend, Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Mego and Shime on WEEI.
You know, you just realize a certain point that, you know, you might be on a trajectory of whatever people want to call it, you know, have a legendary career or all-time great or whatever. And just, you know, you see the impact that you had on the game of basketball and obviously with the Celtics, you know, winning 3 championships, 3 MVPs in a row, which is incredible. You know, you just subtly start to see that, you know, we both scored 60 points in the game. You started getting mentioned and the only other Celtic to do this. And, you know, obviously once you win a championship, it's like, all right, you can be in those rooms with the Celtics legends. And, you know, but it doesn't just stop at one. You know, you obviously got to win multiple, and that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, I always wanted to be the best. And he's, you know, in my opinion, the best Celtic ever. He did it the right way. And he's a great guy to chase in a sense.
Mega and Sean here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. That was Jason Tatum saying he's trying to chase the greatest Celtic ever, Larry Bird. Mego, I know you disagree with him that Larry Bird, not the greatest Celtic ever. But
no.
But do you think he can catch Larry Bird? Do you think Jason Tatum is in a position right now where he would be able to catch Larry Bird and really put himself at least in the conversation with Larry Bird and Bill Russell?
So I think like the attributes that he pointed out there are just really difficult to do in the modern NBA.
Yeah.
3 championships would be really excellent for the Jays. Yep. I think that's attainable. The one. I think they could repeat this year, and then could Tatum get another one? I don't know, 2 years from now, like, are they going to three-peat? I think that would be really difficult. Nobody's done that since the Lakers in the early
that odd. Kobe and Shaq Lakers, yeah.
So I think they could get the 3 championships, but the 3 MVPs in a row, that's really difficult. Yep. I mean, Tatum, at this point, part of it has to do with the roster around him and how early he is. He's only 26. But he's finishing like 3rd and 4th in MVP conversations. In last year's vote, he finished 6th, so he wasn't even top 5. That, if you're just trying to look at the the attributes of the two guys and say, well, this guy has this many MVPs, that's tough to do.
Yeah, I think he's going to have plenty of the counting numbers, right? Your points, your 3 points, like your rebounds, assists, all of that. I think Tatum will be able to acquire. And theoretically, Tatum should have a longer career. Like, it's just today's athletes are more durable. It's easier to play deeper into your, you know, late 30s, into your 40s. And he's not dealing with the same kind of injury issues that Larry Bird was dealing with. And so longevity-wise, Tatum can accrue all of those stats and really make a push in that direction. But I think you're right. Like, he's already getting penalized for being on a great team and not winning MVPs. Like, it's going to be very difficult for him to ever – it's going to be hard for him to win one MVP, let alone three in a row.
I think, like, what the important context to put around this is – Tatum had a bigger fish in the pond when Kyrie Irving was here.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be Kyrie's team. It was supposed to really be Kyrie and Gordon Hayward's team when they put that roster together. And then Tatum was growing into the guy that he was growing into, and much more quickly than I think anybody expected, even when Danny Ainge drafted him. And now you put this, what's really become a super team around with Porzingis, with Jrue Holiday, on top of Jaylen Brown, Derek White's developed into somebody who's like in fringe all-star conversations over the last 2 years. Does anyone, like, I'm asking from the perspective of the old heads out there.
Yeah.
Like, you Larry Bird stands. Did you feel like Larry Bird ever got knocked for having Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish there, or even Bill Walton there? Like, was there ever somebody taking away from Larry Bird saying, well, look at the team around him. The team around him is so good. How can you give him most valuable player when the roster is so good? And I think maybe we just look at the league differently now than at that time. So that's the other part is, I do think it's harder to emerge as this transcendent talent in the NBA now. To be a superstar in the NBA now, I almost think it's tougher because the talent is deep and you're just in the conversation with a lot of different guys, and it seems like it's a fluid conversation season to season where it's Jokic dominating for like 3 years. It's Curry taking over the league for 7 to 12 years. LeBron is still always there. Can he please just age out of this finally, because he's not even playing in all-star games? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, to put yourself in conversation with Larry Bird, it's one thing to say, I want people in Boston to think of me this way. But I also think from a league perspective, that's just like good for Tatum for like chasing that. But that's just this really high bar.
I also think, and I feel this way, especially about football, but I think just in general, MVP trophies are a lot of the times storyline awards.
So narrative.
Right? Such a narrative based award. That's why Josh Allen won this year instead of Lamar Jackson. Like, every indication is that Lamar Jackson played better at quarterback
this
year.
I think that was pretty tight, though.
But I think Josh won because of the narrative. Like, this was finally Josh Allen's year. And I think you've seen that before, like in Lamar Jackson's first MVP, right? Like, it was just this kid came out of nowhere and he lit the world on fire, and like, of course we're going to give it to him, even if there's other guys that might statistically be playing better than him or get farther than him or have more wins than him. And I think when you look back at Larry Bird's MVPs, like, him and Magic were the faces of basketball. Like, he was leading one of the best teams of basketball every year.
Absolutely.
To the, you know, the number one seed in the Eastern Conference Finals and into the finals. Like, he made, what was it, 4 straight finals, almost made a fifth. He made it to the Eastern Conference Finals in that fifth year.
Yeah.
Like, it's a narrative-based thing. And I just think that in the narrative around the Celtics right now is that the team is great. It's not that Jason Tatum is amazing in leading this team, even if he's playing the best basketball of his life and clearly the number one guy, the alpha on this team. Like, the narrative elsewhere around the NBA is that, oh, the Celtics are just like an insanely well-built roster.
Yeah, and I think for, like, from Tatum's perspective individually, again, I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. I was not on the earth yet. But when it was the height of Magic and Bird, it seems like the rest of the league was reacting to that.
Yes.
And trying to respond to that, trying to get in the conversation of
exactly.
that. It doesn't feel like the rest of the league is at the point where they're responding to Tatum SGA or even Tatum Luka. Now, I think that the rest of the league is responding to the Celtics, and especially what the Celtics have done from a shooting perspective of being so analytically obsessed with the three-point attempts.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I agree. Like, I think the difference is that it's not Tatum taking over the league yet. It's not even about like being the face of the league from the perspective of marketing, of being the all-star, of all this stuff.
But there's no narrative.
It's the play style of people like saying, I think Tatum has the chance to grow into it, but the play style of people looking at it and saying, God, we got to like fix for Tatum. God, we got to change our lineup for Tatum. I think that will happen, but I don't think it's happened yet.
617-779-7937. We're going to continue with the Celtics here on Mego and Scheim on Boston Sports Original WEEI.
Introducing the all-new MLB Plus, your ticket to streaming baseball's best.
It's gone!
Enjoy MLB Network 24/7 with live out-of-market games and award-winning shows. Enhance game nights with MLB Big Inning, live and commercial-free. And hear live home and away radio broadcasts of every game, blackout-free. Even stream minor league games all season. It's all here and it's all new. Get MLB Plus for just $59.99 a year. Visit MLB.com/MLBPlus.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.